Hey, what's up, guys? It's your host, Lopez, and I just want to say thank you for tuning into this episode today. If you're on Facebook and want to show some support with a like on the page, you can find it by going to facebook.com/behindcloseddoorspodcast or just searching Behind Closed Doors Podcast. You can also find it on Twitter at the BCD Podcast and on Instagram at the Behind Closed Doors Podcast. Last but not least, follow the podcast on Spotify by searching Behind Closed Doors in the podcast section to see all the amazing upcoming interviews I have to come. Every Sunday, I post a picture of a band with a hint of who my next guest is. Then on Tuesday, I post a brief clip from our video interview with a good highlight of our conversation we had. And lastly, post the new episode up on Spotify every Thursday morning. Now, on to the episode. What's going on, guys? We got one of a kind multi-instrumentalist here. This dude does a little bit of everything. He's had some experience with Wired All Wrong, Daughters of Mara, Victims in Ecstasy, My Darling Murder, Ashes Divide, Marilyn Manson, and 16 Volt. What's going on, Andy Gerald? How you doing, buddy?
I'm good, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Not a problem,
it's,
man.
It's Gerald, actually.
Andy Gerald. Yeah. Do people say Gerald all the time?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't think anyone's ever gotten it right.
No. Where are you from? Where'd you grow up at?
Well, I was born in Ohio, but I basically grew up in Phoenix, Arizona.
Okay. Is that where you're living at now?
No, I live in Vegas now.
Oh, you live in Vegas. So you've been hopping around a little bit.
Yeah. After the Manson tour, I did a tour called Rock of Ages, which is like a Broadway musical tour. And then I think maybe like a year or year and a half of that, the show decided to do like a sit down in Vegas. So the music director asked the band members if we wanted to get off the road basically and just kind of live in Vegas and do the show there. So that lasted about 4 years here. And, you know, my wife, you know, ended up getting a job and we had a kid. And so we just stayed here.
How's the dad life treating you?
Good. Yeah. I mean, COVID's been bad for pretty much everyone, but
Oh, yeah. The
one good thing about it is it let my wife work from home a little bit more. So we've had a chance to, you know, be together and raise him instead
absolutely.
Of.
Absolutely. How old is he now?
He's almost 2.5.
Oh, okay. That's about the same kind of time frame that my son, he was born on May 8th of 2018. So he'll be 3 this May coming up. So pretty much the same.
That's my brother's birthday, May 8th.
No kidding. Wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome, man. That's awesome. How was COVID with everything? I mean, it's starting to hopefully die down a little bit, but how is it going in your area? Is it kind of hectic still over there?
Vegas has been pretty bad as far as, I guess, just the number of cases.
Yeah.
We've just been trying to kind of just stay in as much as we possibly can, obviously. My wife goes to work a couple days a week usually. So other than that, like we try to just, I mean, we'll, you know, go to parks and stuff like that and outside right. stuff.
Yep.
But as far as like, you know, going inside to anything.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially out there in Vegas, because there's going to be at least a million people that go in and out of places over there, at least, you know, and you don't want to have to worry about who has been in there and where they've been before that and all that good stuff.
She's actually getting her first vaccine shot, I think, in a week, maybe.
Oh, wow.
She just scheduled it today. I forget exactly when it was, but it's coming up. I think in like a week she gets the first one.
Nice.
Because, you know, she's still at the courthouse. She's a court reporter, so she's at the courthouse, and, you know, there's people in and out of there all day long. So,
oh, man.
So, yeah, so that's good. That's, you know, at least, you know, one of us, who knows when I'll, you know, just an average yeah. level get. Yeah. So at least one of us will get it.
My mom works at the hospital, so she's already got both of her series, and hopefully everything, you know, hopefully there's no a new breed of it that comes about, because I've been reading stuff saying that there's a new breed of COVID that can counter against that new vaccine, and we'll just have to hope and see. Trial yeah. and error, I guess, you know, you got to start somewhere with it.
Yeah.
So we'll jump into this, man. You're a great multi-instrumentalist. What got you picking? What was the first instrument that you picked up, and what was the reasoning behind you even picking up an instrument to begin?
I think let's see, when I was maybe around 7 or 8 or 9 or something like that, my uncle Andrew, he was a drummer, or he's a drummer still actually, and so I remember seeing his drum set in, you know, his bedroom, and, you know, when you're 8 or whatever, that drum set is enormous.
Yep.
So it looked really cool. I feel like, I don't know if I ever like started playing, but that was kind of like the first time I remember being interested in like, whoa, what is that? Like, you know, that's cool. But both my dad and my stepdad played guitar. And so I think around 12, my parents got me a guitar and, you know, started taking lessons.
Okay.
So, and then everything else, learning other instruments was basically just necessity, as far as, you know, a band needed a drummer. And so I was like, all right, well, I'll do that. You know, someone needed a bass player. Okay, I'll do that. Like, so just to keep playing anything, you just kind of pick it up. And, you know, every time I would switch an instrument, you know, you take lessons for a while and you kind of, you know, really dig into it. And then, so I'm like, you know, I'm really good at guitar since I've been playing since I was 12, but I'm just good at other things just because, you know.
Yeah, just nature. Yeah. Like guitar. Like I've come to find that my first instrument that I ever played or fooled around with was a bass guitar. And then after that, it kind of gave me the roots of how an actual regular guitar worked, and, you know, just the finger and hand movement and all that stuff. And do you remember what was the first guitar you got?
Oh, it was a Charvel. It was this red Charvel. I really wish I don't even know what happened to it. I wish I still had it. Yeah. Actually, I think, now that I think about it, sixth grade, I did play the viola.
Oh, okay.
1 year. Because actually, I wanted to play the saxophone, but since at that time, it was like the 80s or something, so the saxophone was like really popular, so there were no slots left. So, yeah, so I ended up playing the viola. Which was cool. At least it was a stringed instrument.
Right. Yeah.
I don't really think it had anything to do with me wanting to play guitar, but maybe it helped a little. I don't know.
Yeah. What's the, out of all the instruments that you play, what's your most favorite that you enjoy the most and why?
That's tough because I really like playing the drums. But live, you know, being up in front and able to kind of like interact with the crowd is fun as far as the guitar or the bass. I like the technical aspect of the guitar the best because there's, you know, obviously with the theory and stuff like that, there's a lot more, I guess it's a little more challenging for me, even though every drummer would say that that's more challenging. You know what I mean? Like, and like with the guitar, there's so much, you know, there's so many more sounds, I guess, you can, experiment with than just a regular acoustic drum set.
Oh yeah.
But smashing on drums is super fun. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Especially it depends on the genre too. Like if you're just playing, you know, basic country, then I guess it can be a little bit more lax and somewhat of a boring, like, especially for guys with our genre that we've been having some association with, like with you and Manson, you know, like stuff like that. And I'm sure the acts that you guys have played with Manson at that, you know, drums is a little more appealing because there's a little bit more energy and a lot more enthusiasm to it, in my opinion, at least.
Yeah.
So, yeah. We'll go ahead and jump into one of the first acts that I want to talk with more discussion with you on is Victims of Ecstasy. What was that like with them, and how did that band form together?
So that was one of my like first, like, quote unquote, real bands where we, you know, played shows. We did a little tour with Pigface and basically started it with, you know, one of my best friends, Jim Laveau, who's a photographer, and he's also in the band that we're currently in, There Is No Us, which is like a metal band that we started a while ago. And we just basically started it to just play music and just hang out with our friends and, you know, and have fun. That's literally the only reason. We had a different band before that was kind of like, when I say garage band, I like literally we were in his garage, like just playing like just crappy, you know, hard rock. And then we started getting into more of like industrial music. So once we started that, we were like, all right, well, we want to play, you know, to a sequence and have, you know, different sounds and stuff like that along with the music. And so we sort of changed changed the name to Victims of the Next City, but it was basically the same band. I think we only changed one member, all the same members, but just we wanted to, you know, we were just interested in a different genre, the industrial kind of thing. Really, when we were in high school, we, you know, that's when Nine Inch Nails, the Downward Spiral, and Anchor Superstar and all that stuff. I mean, that really was huge, huge influence on our lives.
So that was kind of the sound that you guys were kind of going based off of, was like a Nine Inch Nails type deal. With that, at least,
kind of. I mean, I guess we were a little more poppy than that. I don't know. It wasn't that great.
No. You guys' EP, though, Chinese Pornography, gained you guys a pretty good fan base up right off the bat with that, because you guys got some awards off of that, from what I've seen, the best industrial act and most likely to make it big. For that EP there, I want to ask, what do you think made that EP stick out so much and do so well?
Well, yeah, we got those awards from the New Times, which is like a Phoenix, like a local Phoenix paper. And they used to do like, you know, have a bunch of bands play together. But the producer who me and Jim worked with, this guy, Mark Madsen, who was like a local guy there, he was really like into, you know, the electronic elements of stuff. And his band was Sipping Soma was basically, you know, all electronic. So we loved his band. So I guess kind of the influence that he, you know, brought to the table as far as how it was going to sound was really what we liked and what made it cool for us. I mean, me and Jim, so he lived in, I forget, somewhere in California, but he lived in this tiny little one bedroom apartment. And so me and Jim just like slept on his couch next to each other for like a week or something. Like, and like, you know, his studio was just in his living room. So we would just like literally wake up and just sit up and then start working on music. Like, but it was fun. I mean, you know, when you're, I don't even know how old we were young. And that's all we cared about. So it was fun.
Yeah, and you guys got right to it. You didn't waste no time with the music. That's awesome. That's dedication. Do you think that would have changed anything with you now if you would have not taken it so serious back then? Do you think it would have made you not to like kind of lose interest, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, I also think that, you know, having people in your friends who were just as into it as you were.
Oh, definitely.
You know, so you weren't like alone in this sort of like, you know, trying to, you know, pursue music. And so I've always had friends who were just as into it, you know, just as dedicated as I was. So you just kind of just went along with each other.
Now with that group, Victims of Ecstasy, you guys had opened up for Disturbed in Linkin Park at one time, correct?
Yeah, that's, we always used to, we love to say that. Actually, I think what happened was, oh man, I might be getting this wrong, but I think what happened was that Linkin Park show, they ended up opening for us. And then obviously we all know what happened with that. But Jim and Chester became, you know, like really close friends, and he ended up taking pictures of Chester a lot, all the time, shows and just promo stuff, and a few tattoo magazines, and you know, they just were friends over the years since then. I think, I mean, it was a long time. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, and you know, I remember, you know, when we saw them, you know, it was undeniable. Like, it was like, wow, these guys are really good. Like, there was no, you know, I pretty much think, you know, when you heard the songs and you saw them and you heard Chester live and you heard his voice, you knew that he was going to do something, you know, even if it wasn't with that band, it would have been with someone else.
What time frame was this? Was this back in the Hybrid Theory days?
I think this was even before. I think they were playing those songs, but I think it was before the album came out.
Damn.
Either that, or it was like it had just come out and they were starting a tour on it or something like that. It was like right at the beginning of everything for them.
Wow.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy.
What about the Disturbed? With that, did you guys ever play a show with them before?
I have no idea. I don't know.
Not sure.
I think so.
What was the experience like you said to ask Jim.
You'd have to ask Jim. He would be good. He would be good to interview too, because he's got a lot of cool stories and he remembers all that stuff.
I actually do have him scheduled on my list for the start of next month. I think that's crazy.
He'll correct me on all the stuff I get wrong.
Yeah. I'll just have him check this episode out before I interview him, and he'll just have to clarify on some things. But from what it sounds like, everything sounds pretty, like it matches up pretty well. Because if it was back in that, you know, when, like you said, when it was your first group that you took serious and all that, and if it was before Linkin Park got as big as they did, you know, then sounds like everything's pretty solid as far as time frame. So the next group I want to talk about with you is Ashes Divide. When you played guitar with them for some time, how did that come about and how long were you with that?
So we did, I think we did just like one tour cycle, like a year. I was living in LA and still trying to just, you know, I was just auditioning for bands. At that point I had stopped trying to do anything original. The band My Darling Murder that I was in, that was one of the bands where we put everything into it. We literally like didn't have any jobs. We had a studio. We would wake up, go to the studio, write songs. We did a little tour with 30 Seconds to Mars and Seether. That one one of my favorite bands. You know, I took that very seriously. And when that broke up, it was kind of like the singer left and the three remaining musicians. We were, you know, we'd been best friends for years. We were like, all right, that's it. Like, we need to, if we want to be actual musicians and make money, be a professional musicians, we have to live in LA. We have to audition for, you know, bands that are signed and, you know, be hired guns. Basically that was our next plan. You know what I mean? So that's what we did. And we moved to LA and slept on our friends' couches and slept in weird apartments. But so that audition just came up. Billy Howerdale was putting a band together, and at that time he already had Matt, the bass player, and Jeff, the drummer. And so I went in and did the audition. And luckily, I had a mutual friend, Sean Bevan, who's, you know, producer for Nine Inch Nails and Pantera. He's done all kinds of things.
Oh, yeah.
But he did, he produced the My Darling Murder stuff for us. So he knew Howard Dell, and he basically, you know, put in a good word and said, you know, basically said, this is the guy. But I still went and, you know, did the audition and played with everybody and ended up getting it. And so that was like the first, like, you know, band that I was in where, you know, we did a real tour. I remember like walking outside and seeing the tour bus for the first time and getting on the tour bus for the first time. And it was amazing. Like, it was an amazing feeling because I've toured in cars and RVs, in vans, you know, and it was that thing of like, okay, well, this is the next step, you know.
Yeah.
I finally made it. I got a tour bus.
Not having to sleep in the back seat of a van with a bunch of other smelly dudes and having to take turns driving. And oh man, I'm sure that was just like, you know, you're just like, I did it. Finally fucking did it.
Yeah. So that was cool. That was a fun tour. We had a blast. The band was, you know, the band was slamming. We were right on. And I think, most of us in the band, that was like our first, you know, besides Billy, that was our first like big, you know, tour. Like all those guys, I think, were doing the same thing that I was, living in LA and trying to, you know, audition and be professional musicians, basically. So we all were excited and it was all something new and fun.
Did you guys do any, because if I'm not mistaken, you guys did a run or two with Stone Temple Pilots?
Yeah, so we were in the middle of doing just like our own little like headlining tour, like in clubs and stuff. And I don't remember how it came about. I think what happened was we were, you know, we would do festivals, right? And then in between those festivals, we would be doing our own little club shows. So I think at some point we played a festival or two with STP, and they asked us like, hey, we have this 2-week run. You guys want to hop on it? And we're like, yeah, yes,
we do. Was that with the whole, all original members
of STP?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Oh man. That's some epic stuff. Holy shit.
Yeah. And watching them every night, it was like, whoa.
Yeah.
These guys.
Oh my God.
These guys are awesome. But yeah, they were all super friendly. And I mean, Scott was in his own little world, but
yeah.
The actual band, those guys were super friendly and super nice.
Now, when you did that tour run, was this around the time when the albums Core and Purple and all that was around, like with, you know, Dead and Bloated and Wicked Garden? Was that around that time frame with that?
No, I think this was way later. This Ashes tour, I think, was in 2008, 2007 okay. or 2008 or something like that. So yeah, this is way after that.
I'm sure they still played on some of those material.
Oh yeah.
Oh man.
I'm pretty sure most nights they would still open with Dead and Bloated. And I'm it was sure awesome. Yeah, like, yeah. It was awesome. Oh, my
God. Did you get any compliments from any of the guys from STP on you guys?
Yeah, actually, you know, the guitar player, I forget his name right now, which is terrible. But he actually like really liked me and my guitar playing. He was really nice and gave me compliments a few times.
How big was cool. that? That was crazy.
I bet. It was awesome. Yeah. It was awesome.
Did you ever grow up listening to them, like when you were before you were able to get with Ashes?
Yeah, I was an STP fan. I liked in high school and later on, like I listened to every sort of music. So I was never like, you know, I guess industrial and was my favorite genre back then, but I liked all kinds of rock, you know.
So being able
All
to
the
tour
grunge
with.
stuff. I think Alice in Chains was probably my favorite grunge band.
Yeah.
But I still like, you know, Pearl Jam and Nirvana and STP.
So being able to tour with them and get that compliment from him, I'm sure that was just pretty overwhelming at the time.
Oh, it was amazing.
Do you still keep in contact with any of those guys?
No, I mean, like I said, we were, I think it was like a week and a half or 2 weeks maybe that we, you know, toured with them. And, you know, you try not to really, you know, while you're out the, you try not to really bother anybody. I mean, if you see someone in the, you know, at lunch or whatever, you say hi. And if they, you know, start talking, then that's one thing. But, you know, at that point, it was like, you know, I'm not gonna try to bother anybody.
Right. Yeah. How did they go about that type of stuff? If you were like, just a up and coming band, and then say that they get on a big tour with like, I don't know, like Metallica or something like that. And how do they typically go about that if they start to like fan out on them, like they're trying to like find them and talk to them and just be kind of,
Well,
you know what I mean?
a band like Metallica, I would be surprised if you ever saw any of them before. You know, there we so Ashes did a few festival dates with Linkin Park too, where Linkin Park was the headliner. So I mean, we would go on in the daytime, obviously, and they would go on last or whatever. Maybe someone else was after them, but they were, you know, one of the bigger bands. And those guys would straight up roll in like six black SUVs for each one of them. You would see them literally just drive up to the stairs backstage. They'd all get out, they'd go up, they'd play, they'd get back in their SUVs, and they were out of there.
Where do they hang out
And
typically before they get in those SUVs? Just hotels or?
well, it depends on the show. Like, I guess a lot of times they would just fly in, do the show. And then there was a couple other shows where they traveled, you know, and they would hang out. But I just remember the one show of them just rolling deep with those black SUVs. It was awesome.
Like a fucking president coming into town.
Yeah, it was.
So now the last act that I want to cover with you, out of all the acts that you've done, is that it was just, I think it was a tour run that you did with Manson on the high end of the low tour. How did that come about?
So kind of in the same way as Ashes did, Sean Bevan was doing, I forget which record it was, but he was mixing one of the records when Tim Skold was still in the band, I think. And so obviously, you know, they've been friendly for years. And I think he sent me a text message. I think I was like in a movie theater with my wife, and he sent me a text message, and he said that Manston needs a guitar player, because the guitar player that they had, I think it was the guy, I forget the band he was in, but anyway, his main thing was going on tour, so they needed someone. And so between Bevan and Howerdel, I think Howerdel sent Twiggy a text, and I was like, hey, you know, Andy's cool and blah, blah, blah. And then Sean basically said the same thing. So I met with Twiggy, and he was like, well, what do you think about playing the bass? Because I haven't played guitar. And he's like, you know, I wrote a lot of those guitar riffs. And I was like, sure, I'll play the bass. And, you know, at the time I was playing in, or I had, I forget. It's so long ago. But, you know, he asked me, you know, what kind of bass do you play? And I said, a Thunderbird. And, you know, and he was like, excellent. Like, you know, so it was perfect. And he was, you know, he was super nice. And so I did, I mean, I guess I technically did an audition, because there was, I think they were looking at one other guy. And so me, Twiggy, and Ginger just got in a studio and just jammed a couple songs or whatever. And Verena too. Chris Verena was the keyboard player at the time. So we all got in a room and jammed. And basically that was a weird thing too, because no one ever said like, okay, like you got the gig. It wasn't even said. It was just like, hey, okay, cool. We're rehearsing, you know, on this date. And I'm like, okay. So I just would show up, and every day of rehearsal, I would just be like, do I have it? Or is someone else coming in and rehearsing with you guys too? Like, no one ever said anything. It was so bizarre. And Manson never showed up. So it was just like, you never knew. I was just like, well, I don't even know. So eventually, I think a week or two into it, I was like, all right, obviously, like if the tour's in a couple of weeks, if they're going to get someone else, it's going to be really weird. But so I think we rehearsed for maybe 3 weeks or something. And then like the day before we left, Manson came down and sang a few songs, and that was it.
Did you guys have much interaction together, you and him?
Yeah, I mean, on tour, yeah, you see him all the time.
What type of person is he? Because I know on stage, when I seen him open, not open, he played at Open Air in Chicago, and I guess they went over their time by like a song or two, and Five Finger Death Punch played after, and they were pretty pissed about it, and they were talking about, you know, my lawyer is better than his, and just this and that, and I didn't know what the deal was or how that goes about with as far as going over on times or anything like that, but I know that the boys in Five
Well, I can work. Well, I can guarantee you that he had no idea that he was going over time. Like, that's the last thing he would be thinking about. So if they had a couple songs left in their set, he, in his mind, he's just, we have two songs left. I mean, like we're just playing our songs. Like, I doubt anyone said, dude, you got to get off stage. Like, no one would say that to him. So with that kind of thing, I mean, trust me, I get it. If like, I get why they were upset about it. That would annoy me too. But I highly doubt he did it maliciously to keep them. Or, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
he probably just had at something like that. He probably didn't even know that he was going over his time.
And plus the interaction with the crowd and everything, and just the vibe and everything that was going on, everything was just going so fluently and smoothly, and everyone was having a great time. So, you know, like you said, that's probably the last thing that he had on his mind was keeping track of times on anything.
Yeah.
What's, besides those acts, what's some other acts that you've done fill-ins or anything before that you've had the most fun on?
Feeling, I don't know. The 16 Volt Band was one of my favorite bands growing up too, and I finally got to play with them for a tour or so. So that was really cool, even though it was a smaller, you know, smaller type thing. But you know, playing with a band that you loved when you were, you know, younger, and getting to play those songs, you know, it's just like, it's the same thing with Manson. I mean, I remember, and you can ask Jim about this, when I played in Phoenix, we were doing the tour with Slayer, and, you know, so I had all my family and friends come out, obviously. And I had Jim came out to shoot pictures, and normally, you know, I think you can only do like one or two songs or something, and then they tell you to leave. So I asked Manson if he could shoot the whole thing, and he let him do it. And I just remember like a couple times, you know, a song would start and I would look down at Jim like, holy shit, like, isn't this crazy? Like, that I'm playing, like, it was so bizarre of like playing some of those songs. It's like, there's, you know, what's fucked up is there's people out in the world who have Antichrist Superstar CDs with my signature, with my autograph on it, which is the dumbest thing ever. Like, I remember, I forget where we were, where we did a signing. And the tour manager's like, come on, we got to do a signing. And I'm like, I'm not doing that. That's stupid. And he's like, no, you got to do it. He's like, Manson wants you to do it. And I was like, ugh. So it like, I like felt bad for doing it. The best part was like, maybe like 20% of the people, you know, we were all sitting at a table, obviously, and they would like go down one by one, right? And so it would get to like, I think Verena was sitting on one side and Ginger on the other side of me. And like some of them would just pick up their stuff and like skip over me. And but in my mind, I was like, yeah, that's the right thing to do. Like I would do the same thing if I was you. Like, you know what I mean? It's like, who the hell, this guy's been in the band for like a week. Like, who cares about it? Like, I just remember going, yeah, like, I would like look at him and kind of smile. Like, yeah, I get it. Like, you're right. That's right.
And then you'd have a handful. Yeah, that was, did you ever have a handful of people that walked up to you and they're like, oh my God, your bass skills on this album changed my life.
No, there were people who thought that I played on the actual album, but I didn't. I mean, how would they know? Like,
unless they you know, they studied the credits on the songs and
yeah,
you know, there's only a handful of people that do that type of stuff. Now, when you go on tours, what's a day in the life like for you on tour? Because I know every band and every artist, they have their different, you know, their different preferences that they like to have and just different, their different routines that they do. So what's like on a tour for you? What's it pretty much like for you?
Well, I guess it depends on the tour, but it also depends on where you are too, right? I mean, the first time I went overseas to like Europe, it was like you have to go and explore, right?
Oh yeah.
And then once you explore a few times, you're just like, okay. I mean, you know, everywhere's the same. Everywhere has restaurants and bars, and it's all the same everywhere. So if there was a place that you went where you're like, oh, that, you know, this is something cool that you have to see. We went to Bruges and Belgium, and me, Twiggy, and Verena like took a detour to go there. And and I mean like a detour, like the bus couldn't even drive into the city. We had to meet a van outside the city and have it take us there. I think we were there for like a day or two. But we explored that whole city and all the old churches, and like it was really, really cool. But normally if you're like in the States and you just kind of hang out on the bus and watch TV and go get lunch, or like it's pretty boring. I mean, it's that hurry up and wait kind of scenario of there's nothing happening. You have to be at sound check, so you kind of time your stuff by that, and then, you know, 6 hours later you have to play for an hour, and then it's like, okay. But yeah, I mean, unless you're in a place where there's actually like something that you've wanted to visit or wanted to see, you pretty much just kind of hang out and watch TV or eat or whatever.
So it's just pretty much basic, just pretty much daily life for you then out there.
Yeah.
Now what about off days? What do you guys typically like to do on off days? Pretty much the same thing, just relax and kick back and take advantage of it.
Yeah, off days were good because you usually would have a hotel room and you can just lay in bed and watch TV and order room service and just relax and not have to worry about sleeping on the bus. But I actually got pretty used to the bus. The sleeping was pretty good eventually. First few times, it's weird just because it's so small. But the Manson tour was different because there was only five of us on the bus. So the bunks, you know, they split that you can have like a bigger, instead of three to each side, you know, it was two. So it was a little bit better. But other than that, it's the same thing. You know, you try to find a bar and hang out and relax.
What's the craziest thing that's happened to you on any of the tours that you've been on?
craziest thing.
Whether it happened to you guys or it's just something that you experienced or saw.
I don't know. I mean, like, one of the highlights of my musical career was playing a show, and I have no idea where we were, but it was like a festival. And I go over to my tech, who was one of my best friends in the whole world, who I brought with me because it was like, you know, I asked them if I could take my own tech and they said yes. So I was like, cool, I'm going to get one of my friends. So I go over, you know, between songs, sometimes you just go over and hang out. And well, if there's like a intro to a song or like he's talking or something. And I go over there and he goes, turn around, look who's behind you. And I turn around and Slash is standing like 10 feet behind me. And growing up, you know, since I was 9 years old, I've been listening to Guns N' Roses. Slash has been one of my guitar heroes for my entire life, basically. So I turn around and I like have a drink, you know, and I just kind of like do like a little cheers, and he's like, cheers. And so then he's watching me play on stage. Like I've watched him play, and it was surreal. Like, and the only shitty thing was when we were done, you know, I couldn't wait. I was like, in my mind while we were playing, I was like, oh man, as soon as we're done, I'm going to go over there. I'm going to say hi. And then that'll be it. I'm not trying to bother him, but at least I want to say hi. And he was gone.
Oh
yeah. He probably just watched a couple songs and was like, and bailed.
Did they play at all that night or?
No, actually, I'm not sure. I think he might've just been hanging out. Like, I don't know if he was playing. I don't remember. I think that show, we got there like late, 'cause we were going on late, and it was a weird show, like out in the middle of the woods somewhere. And like the dress rooms were like tents. It was crazy. But yeah, so I'm not sure exactly what he was doing there, but that was one of the coolest moments ever.
Oh, wow. That's, I wouldn't know how to handle something like that, you know, 'cause that's definitely, you see someone like that out in of a crowd of a million people, you can easily spot someone like that out, you know, especially with the whole getup that he has, you know, the hat and everything. It's just,
yeah. it's unmistakable that it's him.
Yeah. I know a lot of people have gotten him and Rod Stewart mixed up together. Howard Stern, I think it is. Howard Stern.
Oh, yeah. That makes more sense.
They get a little, yeah, I don't know why I said Rod Stewart.
I was like, yeah. Rod Stewart, that's hilarious.
So aside music, what's some of the things that you're into? Do you like?
I'm like into board games. I'm kind of like nerdy when it gets to that kind of stuff. I play this game called Infinity, which is like a tabletop game, which right now we can't do it just because of COVID, but we like really get into it. So it's like one of those things where it's just this weird thing that I think I was at a game store buying a game or something, and a couple of the guys were doing a demo of it. And I was like, and I've never seen anything like that. Like, I guess once you get into it, then you realize that there's a whole world of this, of these like miniature games. And like, but I've never seen it before in my, like, literally I've never seen it before in my life. Didn't know anything about it or any other miniature or anything. And so I was like, oh, this looks kind of cool. Like, what is this? And they showed me and I was like, all right. So, you know, you start playing blah, blah. And then you realize like, whoa, like, this genre of this game is huge. Like Las Vegas has a convention and it's basically just all that. Now this is one of the games, but there's like multiple games, you know, and they rent out the whole, like, you know, bottom floor of the convention center, and you go in and all these games are set up and, you know, everyone's there like playing and it's like a tournament and it's actually really fun. But you know, it like, once you got into it, like you really get into it. But yeah, I would say like, that's, I guess, a hobby.
So do you play Monopoly with real money?
No, we don't play Monopoly. We haven't gotten there yet. I'm sure when my son gets older, we'll there's just way better games than Monopoly, as far as I'm concerned. But I'm trying to build up the board game collection so that when he's, you know, old enough, he'll have like a choice, or like,
yeah,
you know, if they like the theme or something like that, they'll get into it more.
Now here's a tricky one for you. Out of your whole music career, what's one conflict or a failure that you faced, and what did you do to make a comeback from that?
Yeah, I think the My Darling Murder Band was the one that stung the most, like when we broke up, and just because of the amount of work and money. I mean, like we all borrowed money from our parents so that we didn't have to work. And, you know, I was living in a house, in a room with friends. So I was paying like $200 a month for rent, which is nothing. But, and we just really took it seriously and, you know, did a record with Bevan, and, you know, and the singer ended up having to move. I think he had to move with his wife. And, that literally ended my, you know, at the time it ended my pursuit of trying to be in my own band. It was like, okay, that's it. Like, like that was the last straw. It was like, fuck that. Like, let's move and try to just be hired guns. Like the three of us, literally, the three band members were like that. Like, we can't. I think we tried a different singer out, like one different singer, and it was like, you know, like this isn't gonna work, type of thing, and that was that. But yeah, that was rough.
And where do you think you guys would have gone if he wouldn't have had to have moved? Do you guys think that something really, really big could have potentially?
I mean, who knows? Like, we eventually, you know, after doing all the other stuff and touring and stuff, we got a new singer and recorded more songs with Bevan. And that ended up kind of fizzling away because I got the Rock of Ages tour. And, you know, at that time, it wasn't like, you know, I just had a 9-to-5 job. Like, I had to work. So it was like, stay, you know, in Arizona and try to do that again, or, you know, go back on the road and work. So, you know, who knows? But at this point now, at least, you know, me and Jim have, you know, started There Is No Us again, and or not again, but we've just been doing it for a few years. But it's not that thing of like, you know, when you're in your 20s and you're like, we have to make it, type of thing. It's just like, you know, we can just write music and have fun with it and play shows. And, you know, if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. But it doesn't have that same sting as it did when you're in your 20s. And it kind of seems like everything, you know, that revolved around that just comes crumbling down. And you now make a drastic decision like moving to LA.
With the group that you and Jim are in, do you guys have anything that's you're working on currently that you can talk about?
Yeah, we're just a couple songs. We got a couple more songs to demo out. And then we're going to go and record like another EP.
Nice.
And,
when do you guys plan on, when you guys have any dates in mind that you might drop any of that kind of material?
I have no idea.
Nothing yet.
I mean, with all the, it's just like everything's just been put on hold. Just getting out to Arizona to record and doing all that stuff is a, you know, it's a chore because it's like, when do you go? Like, does everyone have to take tests before you go?
Right.
You know, you got to just basically stay in one spot. And, you know, this the music that we're working on now is a little different too, because the other two guys in the band, you know, the we've done two EPs already, and it's basically just me and Jim in a room by ourselves, just like writing music. And so with this one, it's like, you know, everyone's involved. And so, you know, there's more people involved, which means there's more risk of, you know, getting COVID and blah, blah, blah. So it's just been a pain in the ass, like, this whole thing. And I know, obviously, like, other people have had it way, way worse than me, but you know,
we're just trying still to stings all nonetheless. With all the instruments that you play, do you give any lessons or anything in that nature?
No, I gave guitar lessons for a little bit a while ago, but I don't have the patience for it. It would have to be, I used to sub, there's a place called School of Rock here in Vegas that it's like a actual school. Like kids go there like after their normal school and they learn every instrument. It's actually a really cool like concept in school. And I subbed there a couple times for a couple teachers. And it's just like, I don't know. I just, unless it was, you know, someone specific who was like super dedicated and I knew that took it seriously. Like, I don't want to teach someone and then they just blow it off. Like, that would annoy me.
Right. Yeah, I hear you. So pretty much with COVID, with the whole shutdown with the music and everything, that's pretty much what you and Jim have been working is just that EP.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, I haven't had a show since actually, I think it's been like a year. I think I did a show in last January. So I do a, now I do a, you know, I do a Tom Petty like tribute band that we do here and we like travel all over.
Oh, cool. What kind of, what's your guys' set list look like for that? Just pretty much all the hits.
It's all the, I mean, every song that is a hit.
Yeah.
yeah. So every, you know, obviously every show we had last year was canceled and we're starting to book shows this year and you just kind of don't know, like you don't know if they're going to cancel or, but I mean, at least stuff is getting booked, but yeah, so we'll see. I mean, luckily, you know, my wife has been able to stay working.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, so.
If you hadn't made it as far as you did with music, what would your plan B have been?
Oh, my God. I don't know. I don't know. I got so lucky.
All right. Now, the last question that I want to go over with you. If you had a say in keeping the color of grass being green, would you have kept it green or would you change it to a different color?
I don't know. I think grass is every color but green, right?
That's right. It can turn brown in the summertime. Yeah. It does over here in Indiana when it gets hotter than shit, but
I guess that's a good color for grass. I don't know. Vegas is mostly rocks.
Yeah. So
like everyone's front yard is just rocks because no one wants, you know, no one wants to water their grass for 10 hours a day.
Yeah. Or they have to mow it
alive.
Yeah. Mowing's a really fun task to do in the summertime.
But, yeah, I remember having to do that when I was a kid. That was a bummer. My kid will never have to do that because everything's rocks. Plus, our backyard is fake grass. So,
how does that work out? Is it just like turf or?
Yeah, but I mean, now they've done it. They've done a good job of like making it look like actual grass.
I'm gonna have to look.
So it doesn't look like a. Yeah, it doesn't look like a putting green.
Right.
Yeah. It actually looks like it looks good. Like it looks, and you know, you don't have to do anything to it.
Can't beat that, man. Well, Andy, it was real cool talking with you, dude. I definitely learned a lot of stuff that I wanted to check into, like with your experience with Manson and your experience with playing a couple shows with STP. Is there anything that you want to say to anybody listening out there?
Stay safe.
Check your music out. Wear when a it mask. Comes out. Yeah, wear a mask. Don't be that dick.
Wear
right?
a goddamn mask. Yeah. And yeah, hopefully, you know, when we have stuff ready, you know, I'll hit you up and maybe we can do this again and talk about the EP or
yeah, I definitely. Maybe we can have a gym together.
Yeah, that would be fun. That's actually better because he's better at this than I am, this kind of stuff.
Now, yeah, like you said, when this comes out, you'll have to get a hold of me so we could go over this new EP coming out. And can anybody find you on Instagram or Twitter? Are you on Instagram or Twitter?
I am on Instagram. I have a Twitter account, but I don't use it. I only use it to follow like people that I like to follow. I don't use it for followers or to try to get followers. My Instagram might be private too. I think I put it to private. It's just Andy Gerald. But yeah, I mean, you know, most of my social media stuff is private.
Yeah. All right, buddy. I'll, like you said, when you get the EP out, get a hold of me. We'll talk some more in the depths on that and how that came about and kind of go beyond behind the scenes on that. And, I will stay in touch with you, buddy. I appreciate the time you took out.
Cool. Thanks, Devin. I appreciate it.
I'll see you, buddy. I'll stay in cut.
Okay. Thanks. Bye-bye.